This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And it's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, still with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage and also Richard Bradbury.
Hello.
Now,
I'm not sure I like the way you say still.
Well,
still with Matt Armitage.
Yeah, well,
he hasn't left yet.
Yeah, it's normally a happy sign that, all right, Matt Armitage has gone out of the studio and we're starting a new show.
We can all be happy again.
The doom and gloom. But actually, this time around, Matt ended his earlier part of the show on a happy note, on advice, actually. Useful advice
as
well.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was on a happy note. It was on
useful,
advice. It was useful
advice, which is very strange of Matt. And because you're talking about, you know, the whole ransomware and, you know.
Oh, there are ways to protect yourself. Usually I just say, oh, you're going to die.
Yeah, well, you did actually say we could all just live in a hole, you know, and everything will be solved.
Yeah, but nobody's living in my hole. What's mine.
What's interesting is this whole NSA story of, you know, this ransomware and, you know, it came out from, you know, stolen data from NSA. Edward Snowden, remember that dude who, you know, went escaping in Russia and then now he's somewhere in South America or somewhere and then, like, he's come back to Russia or something?
He's in the Ecuadorian...
In the world, right? Yeah. So he's not allowed back to the US and I don't think he's going to be ever allowed again because he basically blames NSA for, you know, enabling the unprecedented cyber attack because he's saying that... Didn't I told you so? In a way, right? Well, I'm not quoting him, but he's basically came out and basically said that, you know, these are the people that I was working with and they've had these devices and these softwares and, you know, this was what I was warning you about.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it was like I was saying before, it is theoretically good for agencies like the NSA to publish these exploits or to inform the companies that they found them. But it does also depend on other countries doing the same thing, because if I remember correctly, it was a cyber attack that was attributed to the US. It was never proved that helped to derail or slow down Iran's nuclear program.
Stuxnet.
So. You know, it does form...
And they celebrated that, you know?
Yes, they secretly.
They were like, look what we've done. We've managed to do this.
Of course, because it is a big success for
sure.
them. And by the same token, we've seen attacks on the Democratic Party in the US and the taking emails, and the same against the candidate Macron in the French presidential election, a big data dump from there. So we know that countries are doing all of this cyber espionage. So there is this thin line between what has to be made public and disclosed to companies and what the cyber defenders, I guess you have to call them, keep for themselves as part of their own armory of weapons. It's a difficult decision, I think.
It is, yeah. So, you know, Snowden came out and said that they knew about this in the US software, US infrastructure, hospitals around the world, these auto plants and so on and so forth, but they did not report it to Microsoft until after they, meaning NSA, learned that the flaw had been stolen by some outside group. So,
by the same token, a lot of the software, I mean, we're talking about this kind of exploit, but a lot of critical infrastructure in a lot of countries is completely unprotected. Water authorities and electricity utility plants in the States have all been attacked and hacked relatively easily. Nobody has traced exactly who the perpetrators were. They're thought to be one country or another. But we just don't do enough to actually secure these systems. We don't treat this idea of cybersecurity seriously enough to the point where, you know, we have cars that any idiot with a Bluetooth device or whatever, you know, they can take over your car and theoretically you take over the steering and the braking
has been
and the acceleration.
We talked about it yesterday on Enterprise Biz Bytes about the Jeep Cherokee in the Wired magazine.
Yeah. I mean, I worked in a foreign country not too many years ago, and or if I needed to transfer software, or rather data, from my laptop to the work computer, all I had to do was type in an IP address and it would open up this FTP for me. It was entirely open. I could just dial straight in, boom, send data and software and whatever over the network, and there it was, sat inside a government installation of a foreign country where they were using pirated software. You know, yeah. And I'm like, whoa, you know, so many doors are open.
Anyways, now Matt, you've got some updates on an issue that you're having.
Yes, I had a bit of an issue with Foodpanda last week. I objected to sending them my bank account details via an unsecured email to obtain a refund. So the Foodpanda Malaysia CEO, Sayantan Das, contacted me a couple of days ago to actually resolve the issue.
That's nice of him.
It's very nice of him. If I didn't have a radio show, I'm not sure who would have contacted me, but I'm very glad that he did. The issue is apparently caused by regulations that govern payment systems like FPX in Malaysia. So if you do make a payment to Foodpanda via, say, your Visa or your MasterCard, these can be refunded directly to source, straight back to your card or to your account. Foodpanda say they are aware that this is not an ideal situation. They are looking at ways to resolve it. So my suggestion for the time being is, if this is a concern with you, not just with Foodpanda, but a lot of online vendors who use payment services, payment gateways, pay by cash if you can. Use Visa or MasterCard or PayPal if it's available, because you have a little bit more security with these things in terms of getting your money back. If you do use these services and you don't want to send your bank details for refunds, you may have to do what I've done, and that's settle for store credit.
Yeah,
that's another option.
Now, anyways, the patents, Will, it seems to be Apple is having a bit of a weird obsession recently.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lovely little story in The Guardian this week. Apparently back in 2012... Apple patented a pizza box. And yeah, exactly.
I've not seen in the Apple store a pizza box yet.
No,
it's I need to Google this and take a look.
Yeah. It's actually for use on their own campus. So they have pizza for their staff.
But why?
They came up with one that's round. So it's actually the same shape as the pizza. So they thought that was pretty cool.
Right.
And it has lots of ventilation holes in it as well.
Typical Apple.
Yes, so that the engineers who buy it can take it back to their desks, and it doesn't get soggy because of the steam building up inside.
So long battery life then, I guess. So,
yeah, exactly.
Long pizza life.
Long pizza life. So it's not the first time they've done this. A few years back, they also patented a design for a paper bag. The reasoning behind that was they wanted to use, I think, 60% recycled paper. And most of the bags using recycled paper were very fragile, and they tore very flimsy. So they tore very, very easily. So this was Apple actually addressing that issue. But the bigger issue is just that these companies have to patent absolutely everything.
They just want to make money.
Yeah,
for everything.
You know, we had the battles between Samsung and Apple over, you know, patented this, you patented that.
I patented the shape of a phone.
Yes, exactly. And they're countersuing each other. Yeah, I patented the shape of a rectangular phone with rounded corners. And you're just like, what is wrong with you? You're all obsessed. I mean, I think at one point they were trying, one of the companies wanted to patent the zoom and pinch. So they actually wanted to patent pinching with your hands to make things bigger and smaller on a screen.
There's far too many lawyers around, clearly.
Apple actually patented the slide to open that they used to use the iPhones.
Yeah.
How do you patent sliding your index finger across a free? I mean, they have been challenged. A lot of the patents have been thrown out of US courts, especially when they've tried to register common words, like, you know, if they want to use a code word for Siri or whatever. You can't just take a word out of the English language and patent it. It is in common use.
Right.
It doesn't belong to anyone. I mean, we said off air, it would be like me going and saying, yeah, I want to patent toes.
Then we can't walk, can we?
Exactly. Not without paying me a royalty. And that's really what I want.
Living off money from royalty in your hole, you know.
Yes, in my hole. Yeah, I'm going to fill the hole with cash until I come to the top.
All right, now let's talk about fake news. So, you know, because obviously when we talk about the US,
it's huge.
It's huge, right? So, so Facebook has been involved with a lot of this, you know, blames of, you know, spreading fake news. And they even sort of, in a way, helped out the presidential election last year, apparently so. So now they've obviously come out and, you know, said that we're going to fight against fake news. And, you know, we have a new fact-checking system labeled a Newport Buzz recently, the article as a possible fake news. And, you know, he gives you a warning that, hey, these kind of articles are fake and so forth and all, right? So according to The Guardian, their new tactics of doing this fake news isn't working. There's no evidence that's showing that this is actually working because the articles are still being shared even though it has been labeled as, you know, possible fake news.
But you see, the where this falls down is in the concept of fake news. At the moment, it's like this school ground fight between two kids who are going, you're fake news. No, you're fake news. No, you're fake news. You know, one side believes everything they read is true and that everything else is fake news. Yep. The other side believes exactly the reverse. The things that the other people believe are true or fake and vice versa. And this is the situation that we find ourselves in. So it doesn't matter if you label it as fake news because the people who believe in that fake news think this is part of the conspiracy by the global liberal media to put fake news in their faces by labeling the true news as fake. So you can't get around it. The true news is fake and the fake news is true.
You know,
and
that
I'm
is
just
so
confused
true
myself. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
I've met a few, you know, pro-Trump supporters and some who are against Trump. And if you see the both of them trying to talk to each other and, you know, present facts and, well, some of them are not facts, some of them are fake news, it's really like, you know, high school. It's like, you're fake news. No, you're fake news. No, like, come on, guys, just stop at this. Seriously.
Yeah.
It is just ridiculous. But, and you can see why Facebook is just having a problem with this, like you mentioned. It is hard.
The thing is, we all need to believe that dinosaurs played with Lego.
Yeah.
That's the only true fact that you need.
Okay, then.
All right. Yeah. I can imagine a T-Rex playing with Lego now.
No, you can't because his arms are too short.
Nah.
No, I wanted to do that joke.
Anyways, we'll go for a short break. And when we come back, we will do King of the Crowds. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back with Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Richard Bradbury and also Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Matt, King of the Crowd.
Yes, this week I have for you Knoops.
Ooh, sci-fi.
Knops. Okay, then.
Yeah. Okay, when you see all these road warriors staring at their screens and wearing kind of fancy noise-canceling headphones in cafes, what do you think they're listening to?
No idea.
Exactly. Often it's actually nothing at all.
Yeah.
They're just using them to tune out the noisy bearded freelancers complaining that it took 23 minutes to get paid for a design masterpiece that took them 23 seconds to hack together from clip art and free fonts. Or maybe to get away from the noise of the chrome-plated cyberpunk machine that makes us espresso sound like a jet taking off.
Yes.
And of course, there's always that one selfish person who's watching online videos with no headphones, always at full volume.
Yep.
You know who you are. Everybody hates you. But noise-canceling headphones are generally a very expensive way to get some peace. Mm. So that's why you need Knoops. They are earplugs. That doesn't sound like very interesting. And you can use normal earplugs, which, you know, you can pick up at a hardware store for a couple of ringgit. Mm-hmm. But earplugs are actually very annoying.
Yes, they are.
I use them a lot and they're incredibly annoying. You have to keep taking them out in order to speak to people, which if you're in an noisy environment.
I'm sorry.
If you take them out, that still means you go deaf because, you know, they're not doing their job anymore. Knoops are different. They're part of a new generation of what's called acoustic filters. And unlike most acoustic filters, they're actually adjustable. They have a simple bezel on each earpiece that allows you to select any one of four settings, clear, city, music, and isolation. So clear, obviously, is clear speech. Mm-hmm. City just tunes out background noise, traffic, that kind of thing. Music is for when you're in a concert or a noisy environment or a cinema, something like that. So it will give you a lot more protection. Right. And then you have isolation, which is, you know, basically tuning absolutely everything out. So you get to choose what works for you. After years of having to go to work in noisy clubs and at music festivals, I have become a huge fan of this kind of ear protection, mainly because I've damaged the hearing in one ear and I really want to keep what I have left. Otherwise, I'll be shouting at you all. But yeah, I use them mostly at concerts. I use earplugs in cinemas, and I even use earplugs now when I use my smoothie machine at home, because my kitchen's really small and my smoothie machine's kind of really powerful. So it's deafening.
So that is again, the definition of a first world problem. I know, right there.
So traditionally, this type of ear protection, it has been expensive, running into the hundreds, if not thousands of ringgit. Knops makes it a lot more affordable. Prices start at $69 plus shipping. Yeah. Knops claim that their device is incredibly stylish. This is potentially a lie. It looks like you've got a miniature flugelhorn sticking out of your
ears. I tell you what it looks like. You know those people who make those holes in the ears?
Exactly, I was going to say that.
Put the flesh loops in or whatever they're called. It looks like that
in your ear instead. Instead of your ear loops, it's like in your ear.
Yes.
Like,
but they are
not stylish, though.
They are very, very useful. Shipping is due to start in November. If you want to know more, check out Knops at Indiegogo.
$69
I mean,
not too bad,
it's one of those products that has made me genuinely curious.
I
think I could say that for sure.
Yeah, curious. It also reminds me of, like, you know, in possible future of an episode of Black Mirror, you could probably have something built into the back of your neck where you could just, you know, slide up and slide down for the level of volume you could have.
Yeah,
and,
or alternatively, you can put knitting needles in both of your ear and pop your eardrums and no noise
Culture
will
Pulse.
Ever bother you again.
We recommend you don't do that at home, though.
The doom and gloom of Culture Pulse Memartage is back, anyways.
Yeah, that was me talking from the hole.
Now, let's talk about drones, because there is a British prison is the first to use a disruptor shield to create like a drone-proof area around the jail. So this is literally like, you know, things that you see in movies where a shield just pops out and you could see this ray going on. And drones apparently can't fly into this shield because it has this some sort of frequency that will bounce back and your drone will just basically go back to where it came from. And this is actually pretty cool because it's the first prison to actually do this. And it creates a 2,000 square feet shield around and above the prison that will detect and also deflect these remote control drones. It uses a series of disruptors, which are sensors to jam the drone's computer, and it blocks the frequency and also controls the protocol. The operator's screen will go black and the drone will bounce back to where it came from. Very cool, though, because the one thing I'm curious, though, is drones entering jails like a big problem here?
It has been very recently in the UK, yes, for sure. There was a gentleman up in one of the prisons up in Birmingham, I believe it was, and he has now been charged 13 times for dropping, not just once, 13 times for dropping illicit substances into prisons. My concern with this one, though, is does it have any effect on things like the birds in the area? You know, if it's bouncing around frequencies and one thing or another over the top of a prison, you know, that's something I'd be worried about.
Don't know, though. Like, you know, do birds operate in the frequency?
Because they actually had in the past an issue with things like carrier pigeons bringing things into prison. So they're not really going to worry about whether it disrupts birds or not, because they have had this issue.
Yeah.
And also because in a lot of places, certainly in the UK, a lot of the prisons tend to be 100, 150 years old, and they tend to be city prisons. Mm. So they're actually in the middle of major urban areas. And even until quite recently, people used to just throw things over the walls. You know, so we talk about drones, but, you know, the good old technology of just lobbing over
something
with your hand. Because, you know, the walls, you know, if it's 20 or 30 feet high, that's still sufficient that you can throw things over. Because as kids, you know, we always used to play throwing toilet rolls over each other's houses and things like that. So it's no different to doing that, really.
Yeah. Well, the prison in the UK that has did this, it opened in 1989. There you go. It's an old prison that's trying to, you know, be all hip and cool.
That's not an old prison in the UK, my word. No.
Well, definitely not. But it's still an old prison, anyways. Now, apparently, microbes have thrived after.
I've got a prison older than that in my my mum's house.
Now, microbes might have thrived after crash landing on board a meteorite.
Wow. Yeah, this is actually a really nice story. I got this from the New Scientist, and we are back to microbes. We were talking about microbes on the show a few weeks ago, and I got some feedback from listeners about the microbes.
Nice.
Apparently, the show really did gross some people out. So obviously, that means I could apologize to the people who found it icky, or I could scare them even more, which is what I'm going to do now.
Nice.
So it turns out that bacteria may not die when meteorites hit a planet. So normally we assume if a meteorite comes,
everything
to Earth, everything gets burned up in the atmosphere. But according to planetary scientists at University College London, even when you expose life to these really extreme conditions, they actually survive really, really well. So apparently what happens is that the cell walls around the bacteria, they harden and relax at the same time during the shock of impact. So they have this kind of glass-like structure that protects the inside, and it kind of sloshes around a bit like jelly inside a mold. And they've tested this using a metal-eating microbe called Schwannella, I can't even pronounce it, oniodensis. So Schwannella oniodensis. And they've given it all kinds of extraordinarily high pressures. But the microbes tend to survive. And they survive in this environment of a shock. So if you subject them to the pressure for a long period of time, they still die. But the shock of an impact is something they actually seem to be designed to survive. So
any implication on us?
All kinds of implications. I mean, it means that we may be able to take bacteria. It might survive a spacecraft landing or even crashing onto other planets. But it also means that it gives a lot more credence to the idea that meteorites can potentially deliver life around the universe, that life could have been brought to our planet on meteorites or whatever. Yeah. So, of course, this is something that has to be kept in mind when we look at all the space agencies, all the private companies that are now looking to explore the solar system. What potentially are they taking to other planets in terms of contaminants, and what potentially could they be bringing back?
It's a theory that's been around for quite a while. Panspermia, is it?
Yeah, panspermia. But it's until they did these experiments, they hadn't been able to prove it, because the assumption was that most bacteria, most microbes will be destroyed in the impact, because there's so much heat. So a lot of the tests they've done have actually been in low temperature environments. They are going to try doing them in higher temperature environments now to see if they get the same kind of results. But yeah, it does give a lot more credence to this theory.
Very
now.
Interesting.
Yeah, really cool.
All right, we're slightly running out of time for Geek Tunes now. Matt, you've picked Jane with Makeba. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this is a song. Jane is a French pop star, like a bona fide big pop star, not the kind of person we usually do for a geek tune. Makeba is a tribute to the South African activist and singer Miriam Makeba. This is a lovely track, Makeba by Jane,
all right.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.